This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, Couch Potatoes, across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. You knew I'd be back, and Arnold is back with the Terminator Genisys. I'm also going to be talking about Magic Mike XXL, almost as sexy as me without my shirt on, plus a couple smaller films like The Overnight, Results, Bound to Vengeance, and Manglehorn. It's kind of an adult week on Fat Guys at the Movies. I'm also going to be talking about some news, one particularly big news story, the trailer park, box office predictions, and of course, the world-famous DVD roundup. But first, if you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. That also works for Instagram if you want to follow me, fatguysatthemovies. And of course, I'm on Twitter at twitter.com/kevincarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. There's one particular news story. It seems like a minor one when it comes to movies and television, but it is important. And again, it's going to sound silly, but in this whole kerfuffle that is happening about the Confederate flag, TV Land has now dropped reruns of The Dukes of Hazzard. And also, there have been other smaller instances like this. I think it was like the Apple Store or iTunes dropped some of those Civil War computer games because of the Confederate flag. Now, look, I have the utmost sympathy for what happened in South Carolina. And as awful as that was, first of all, the Confederate flag did not make a guy shoot people. Just because he had the Confederate flag and just because it means something to him, possibly, does not mean that the flag itself is causing people to do anything any more than watching NASCAR or drinking Budweiser is going to make somebody. I mean, I'm just picking some very typical stereotypes. Those are not going to make somebody do something. Somebody does that sort of thing because they're not right in the head and they have serious problems. And it has zero to do with the fact that there is a Confederate flag displayed really anywhere. Now, I think there is a certain argument to be made about not having a former enemy of the Union's flag flying on a government building in the Union. I think you can make a case for that. Absolutely. But when it comes to art, and you're going to say, the General Lee, Dukes of Hazzard, that's not art. No, no, no. You gotta paint art with a broad brush. You have to consider pop culture entertainment as art. It is. Even if you don't like it. Because here's the thing. I have heard people say, in particular, about this whole General Lee, Dukes of Hazzard thing. I've heard people say, well, that was a dumb show anyways. You don't get to say that. Just as, back in December, you were not able to say, well, it was just a stupid James Franco, Seth Rogen movie, when Sony pulled The Interview out of theaters in response to megalomaniacal, nonsensical threats from North Korea. It does not matter what the subject is. You have to treat art, you have to treat entertainment, and you have to treat the culture of the country in the same way. You do not get to pick and choose, because in the future, somebody might come for something you hold dear or that you like and does not fall into that category of, well, it was a stupid show anyways. This actually isn't censorship. First of all, I want to point that out. This whole thing TV Land did is not censorship. Censorship is government telling you what you can and can't say. And in that sense, our government actually operates pretty much above board on that sort of thing. What happened there is self-censorship, which is not the same as governmental censorship, but it is in a way worse for the culture and for free expression. This is what happens with political correctness. And there is something to be said for sensitivity. And there is something to be said for choosing your words properly. And there is also something to be said that if you are a public figure or a media personality and you stick your foot so far in your mouth, you're kicking yourself in the kidneys, there's something to be said for people boycotting what you do. But when a company, like a media company, is so wussy and skittish that they are trying to jump on the overly politically correct bandwagon, that is when there's a problem. And I think what this reveals, as it did with the whole interview thing with Sony, the real problem are these spineless corporate types who are making these decisions because they are so scared, and they're just trying to jump on a bandwagon. They're trying to do damage control beforehand. You know, it's interesting. I'm showing my kids over this course of this week. We do movie marathons in our family. We pick a subject or a series, and we watch them all. This week, we're doing all 80s movies. We showed them, like, The Terminator and 16 Candles and Breakfast Club. I'm also showing them TV shows from the 80s. And then Dukes of Hazzard is in there, actually. I'm also showing commercials and old movie trailers. And it's funny, as I'm watching these old commercials, I'm pointing out to my kids, oh, yeah, that was a big campaign. Pain and that thing blew up in their face because it was mishandled in the public. Corporate decisions are sometimes made really with stupid intentions. And this business of pulling the Dukes of Hazzard because there's a Confederate flag on a car, go back and watch an episode if you can of the Dukes of Hazzard. This does not make the Southern gentleman look good. That entire show is so full of stereotypes, it is almost impossible to watch. But that's okay, it's played up for comedy. No one is waving a Confederate battle flag. It's just a symbol on the car. And the General Lee is sort of a caricature of the overly prideful South. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that they're missing, and they just pull it because of Confederate flag. So what are we going to do now? Are we not allowed to even have that? Are we going to pull Gone with the Wind? I mean, this, where does it stop? This is what happened. Political correctness can lead to this. And I watched it happen in the 90s. Right now, this is a result of outrage culture and social media shaming, where people sit their fat butts on a couch and are clicking buttons and likes and shares. And you know, you've seen these things on Facebook where somebody links it and goes, this is ridiculous. Oh, shameful. You know, you see those kind of posts all the time. This is what you end up with, because the corporate types, all they see is social media, and you're not really even reacting to it. You're just clicking share. And at some point, there's going to be a correction in the marketplace. But right now, shame on you, TV Land. I'm going to shame them myself. You're pulling a piece of that has nothing to do with this argument. And you are taking the first steps down a very dangerous road. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about some trailers in the trailer park. First one I want to talk about is Steve Jobs, directed by Danny Boyle. Opens October 9th.
You see how this reminds you of a friendly face? It's warm and it's playful and inviting and it needs to say hello.
If you keep alienating people for no reason, there'll be no one left for it to say hello to.
Your Apple stock was worth $441 million, while your daughter and her mother are on welfare.
She's not my daughter!
You're issuing contradictory instructions, you're insubordinate, you make people miserable.
Even if that were true, doesn't sound that diabolical to me.
Just on its own, it is going to be better than Jobs was, which was the one with Ashton Kutcher, what, about 2 years ago? That one was just a TV movie. Josh Gad was in it, and he was okay. But this one looks like it's going to have a lot higher quality. I mean, it's written by Aaron Sorkin, who I'm not a huge fan of, by the way. I'm not a big fan of that witty banter overly done. But I do like Michael Fassbender, and I think Seth Rogen's very well cast in this movie, and I love Danny Boyle's work. So this one has me intrigued, because I kind of want to see a better version of Jobs, and one that doesn't fall over itself to deify Steve Jobs himself. The next one I want to talk about is Creed. Opens on November 25th.
I've been fighting my whole life. It's not a choice for me. Every punch I've ever thrown has been on my own. Nobody showed me how to do this. This picture's from the 10th round of the first fight, right? I heard about a third fight between you and Apollo. Behind closed doors. Is that true?
How do you know all this?
I'm a son.
One of the movies I showed my kids in this 80s marathon was Rocky III. A lot of people don't realize Sylvester Stallone directed all those Rocky movies. He's a good director. People think of him as a chump and a lunkhead, but he's a really good director. He didn't direct this, and that to me is a little disappointing. I mean, I guess it's a changing of the guard. It's going to a different character, and he's playing a different role in this. It looks interesting. It looks like a typical Rocky movie, which is good because Rocky movies are good. I like these films. But it doesn't look as heavy and as drab as, say, Rocky Balboa, as great as Rocky Balboa was. This one, I think, needs a little bit of new blood, and this will give it to you. Michael B. Jordan looks like he's going to do a good job. This guy's going to have one heck of a career. This is going to be his year. keep your eye out for this guy. All right, that's it. I need to go to a break. I'm taking off my shirt. I'm getting ready to do my stripper routine. We're going to be talking about Magic Mike XXL and results. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Shirt, too sexy for my shirt, so sexy it hurts.
Hoo ha, hoo hoo. That's me, Kevin Carr, getting set and getting in shape. I'm in a shape. It's round, but I'm in shape for Magic Mike XXL. I was tempted to go see this screening just in jeans and tennis shoes, of course, because you gotta wear those. That was frowned upon by the theater owners. The other suggestion I had, I actually had a radio host ask me this week. He said, well, you know, because he's going through a divorce, he's like, is this a good place to meet ladies? Can you go to see Magic Mike? And you would assume that there'd be a lot of women there. And I go, well, I'll tell you what, show up in the lobby with no shirt on, jeans and tennis shoes, wearing your hat crooked like Channing Tatum. Start chatting ladies up as they leave the theater and just let me know how that goes. All right, enough jokes about Magic Mike XXL. Let's play the trailer. 3 years after the first film, Mike is pulled back into the world of male stripping for one final show at a sexy convention in Myrtle Beach.
I got a little treat for y'all tonight. We're gonna see if he's still got some magic in that Mike.
Tomorrow, start the pilgrimage to Myrtle Beach for the convention.
I wish we had known you guys back in our day.
Well, I'd say it's still your day, ma'am.
I mean, if this really is our last ride, what if we make up some new routines?
Let's just put this out there right off the bat. I am not the target market for Magic Mike XXL. I'm not a lady. I'm not gay. All right. Those are the people that are going to want to see this movie. Because the catch to this film is a bunch of shirtless dudes who are very much in shape dancing. That's it. There's a story, sure, but what I said before the trailer, that's the story. It's like sort of like one last show. In essence, this is the male stripper version of a Judy Garland, Mickey Rooney movie from the 40s or 50s, where they're like, let's make a show. We can do it. Sure. With a lot of sweaty abs. Here's the thing. I mean, a lot of critics liked the first Magic Mike. I personally didn't. I wasn't. I actually thought the dancing parts in the first movie were kind of interesting. I mean, they were inspired and they did a lot to them. And I thought it was kind of cool to watch. The story is what didn't grab me. And part of it was because Cody Horn, who's terrible, was playing his girlfriend. And she's awful. I mean, she is so boring. And I also thought that they did some just a really stupid character moments in that movie. This one, I would have liked to see that simply because there are just are no character moments in this movie. This is nothing more than a bunch of sweaty dudes in a taco truck on a road trip without air conditioning, driving from Tampa to Myrtle Beach. I mean, is that a fantasy for anybody? There's no ventilation in that truck they're taking. My eyes were watering as I was watching the movie, just wondering about the BO. There's no story to this. And I've had people say, well, you don't have to look for story. But, there has to be something. There should be something. At least the first Magic Mike had a story. This one has no story. And the characters are all a bunch of jerks. They're all horrible people. I mean, Mike's an okay guy. His character's fine. But everybody else is insipid and shallow and sleazy and emotionally manipulative. Here's the thing. I don't care who you are, male or female. Gay or straight, go to whatever your object of desire is. Go to that strip club, talk to the people, and realize how alluring they are to you, and then watch them talk to somebody else and realize that it's all an act. I've met strippers before in a professional context, and they're really nice. In fact, I met this one stripper, and she was making a comment about how she kind of got in a fight with somebody or had some words with somebody out in the parking lot. I go, well, you're nice. She was like, oh, no, I'm nice to you. She even said that to me. She's like, no, I'm easy to deal with for you. I'm not so easy to deal with when I'm not working. You know, I mean, that's nothing against strippers because everyone's got to make a living. But the fantasy ends very quickly. Ask anybody who's dated a stripper, male or female. The fantasy ends very quickly. This movie is just all it is that fantasy. But it's as a female fantasy. What is wrong with you people? I mean, this is the second major female fantasy movie. What's the first one? 50 Shades of Grey. I saw a great meme this week, and it said, in terms of 50 Shades of Grey, the only reason that's a romance is because he's a billionaire. If he wasn't a billionaire, it would be the beginning of a CSI episode. I am all for fantasy. Have your fantasy. But seriously, you're like a Google image search away from way more shirtless pictures of Channing Tatum. And I've also heard the thing where people say, well, guys have all the movies that are just objectify women. Yeah, they do, but they put a story to them, or they try to, or there's something else to them. Like, you know, it's got cool cars and it's a big action movie or something like that. I mean, even Michael Bay movies, which are nothing more than a beer commercial, at least those have robots in them. Seriously, there are only two movies about female strippers that I can think of off the top of my head. And those are Showgirls and Striptease. Both came out in the 90s. Both were notorious bombs. Nobody cared to see them because guys were basically, hey, if I want to see naked pictures, I'll just go get a porno or a magazine. That's not a selling point. That shouldn't be a selling point. I guess part of it is there's a communal experience women have when they go to strip clubs. A male strip club is very different than a female strip club. In a female strip club with the female dancers, guys sit at the table in general, and they sit there, look like they're watching a lecture on the tax code. They're sort of staring. They don't say much. And then they go in the back room, maybe get a private dance. It's a very sort of low-key experience. Women going to a strip club is a flipping circus. And I guess what Magic Mike does, and I think this is why it does well in our society, is because there's a lot of women who would never go to a strip club, but they'll go see Magic Mike with their girlfriends. The dancing wasn't even as good. The dancing at times is very uninspired and at times goofy. I mean, you have one point where Donald Glover is doing a improvised rap. Donald Glover is a stripper on its own. It just seems like a bad idea. I don't get that. It's uninspired and it's silly and it's stupid. And yeah, you see guys dancing. Great. And if that's all you need in a movie, if that's all we need to do, then fine. You know, if you love that, go see it. It's a terrible movie, though. Which is why Magic Mike XXL sucks.
It sucks.
All right, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is Results. A fitness trainer faces a personal and professional crisis after she takes on a new client with plenty of money and no ambition.
I started Power for Life because I wanted to give people power for their own lives.
What can we do for you?
I want to be able to take a punch.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Clients love me, and if they're cool, I'm their best friend.
The guy was weird, okay? He just gave off a weird vibe.
I lead with my butt. See my form?
Yes. I don't have anything in common with it, except a couple abnormal kind of behaviors.
If this is what being in shape means, I would rather die with my arteries clogged and my blood 98% high fructose corn syrup, because this movie is a terrible look at fit people. And I guess that's part of the point. I don't like movies about characters I hate, as you can tell from my Magic Mike review. You gotta have likable characters, especially if you're doing a romantic comedy of some sort. Even if it's supposed to be an R-rated romantic comedy, you gotta be likable. If I don't have likable characters in a movie, I'm lost. I'm gone. This is a love triangle, basically, between this guy who owns a gym and the fitness trainer and this fat, newly rich guy. He's trying to get his life in order, and it just turns into this whiny, complainy, acerbic, unappealing mess. I mean, I struggle to watch this movie. Oh, dear God. The actors are good, and they're very attractive. Well, I mean, Colby Smulders and Guy Pearce are, but they're horrible people. And I don't like to spend my time with horrible people. I purposely avoid horrible people in my personal life. If I have to, if you're working, yeah, you gotta. But I don't hang out with people I don't like. And I had to hang out with these people for 90 minutes with this movie. And I hated myself for it. So, yeah, this one sucks too.
It sucks.
All right, that's it. I need to go to a break. When I come back, we're going to be talking about Arnold in Terminator Genesis and The Overnight. There There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, going back to the future, or back to the past via the free future with Terminator. One other meme I saw that's very clever is it has a picture of Robin Williams from Jumanji as the guy with the scraggly beard. And he says, a Jurassic Park movie's top in the box office. There's a Clinton and a Bush going to be running for president. And Terminator comes out this week. What year am I in? We are at the point now where they're now not just remaking movies. They're rebooting series that are from the 90s. And I mean, granted, the last Terminator movie was in 2008, I think. But, you know, no one remembers that because that was so bad. And I blocked it out like a traumatic issue in my past. I always forget about Terminator Salvation. I liked Rise of the Machines, which is the third one. It came out, 12 years ago before Arnold. It was one of the last ones Arnold did before he became governor. But, when you talk Terminator, people really focus on Terminator and Terminator 2 Judgment Day. And Terminator Genesis knows that. And kind of as Jurassic World was rebooting and going back to Jurassic Park and kind of ignoring the other two sequels, Terminator Genesis kind of ignores Rise of the Machines and Terminator Salvation. And it completely ignores that awful TV show that came out about 7 or 8 years ago. And it goes back and plays a lot with the timeline of Terminator and Terminator 2 Judgment Day. I watched the original Terminator literally the day before I saw this movie. I showed it to my kids as part of our 80s marathon, and then I took them to go see the movie. And I recommend that. There are a lot of series and reboots like the Jurassic Park where it's not necessary to go back and watch the first movies. I completely suggest going back and watching the first two Terminator movies because there's so many Easter eggs in there. And that's actually part of the fun of this movie. Arnold is back as the killer cyborg, helping to save Sarah Connor in an alternate timeline as they travel to the future to stop Skynet from ever coming online.
The machine sent a Terminator back to the time before the war to kill my mother, Sarah Connor.
Sir, let me save her.
What you're doing right now, this is the end of the war.
It's all wrong. John sent me here to save you.
From the Terminator that was sent back to kill me, I know, but we already took care of him.
We
have been waiting for you.
We can stop Judgment Day from happening.
You could tell from that description that it's a little bit convoluted in terms of time travel. And this is coming from a guy who loves time travel movies. I will be forgiving of a lot of things with time travel movies. And it's not that the Terminator films have never violated their own timeline, because the first and second movie actually aren't consistent. Sort of the rules of time travel that the two movies use, they violate each other. That's just the way it is. That's what you get with sequels. But this one is almost like a snake eating its tail. It's ready to implode and completely collapse under its own weight. This whole time travel becomes a house of cards that is in dangerous peril of falling apart during the movie. But there are certain things that save it. Now, it goes back to the beginning, which is to say going back into the future, which is at the war where John Connor sends Kyle Reese back to 1984. And when he gets to 1984, he finds out that other people have been there and other Terminators have been there and the timeline has been completely polluted. And Sarah Connor isn't this innocent waifish waitress somewhere. She is a fighter and she has another Terminator with her who's been reprogrammed, one of the good Terminators played by Arnold. And she has had 10 years of training. Part of the thing with this movie is the actors, I'm not wild about some of them. I do not like Jai Courtney, and he plays Kyle Reese. He's no Michael Biehn. He's like Sam Worthington, who happened to be in Terminator Salvation. There's nothing like offensive about him. He's just boring. And everything I've seen him in, he's boring. This is his shot to be in big movies, and I think he'll disappear and fade into the woodwork. But he's kind of boring at this point. And Emilia Clarke as Sarah Connor, she's okay. She's got the chutzpah for this. But when they put her with Kyle Reese, Jai Courtney and Emilia Clarke do not have very good chemistry, and it's very flat and stupid, and it's forced, and it's really pretty terrible at times. Now, Jason Clarke plays John Connor, and he's fine, But he's not very warm and cuddly, but of course he's the leader of a resistance in a future war against the machine, so you don't expect him to be. Still, he doesn't jazz me when I see him on screen. But when Arnold shows up, either as himself, as the old Terminator, or as a face replacement version of the original Terminator, that's when the movie comes to life. Arnold was born to play the Terminator. That is his pinnacle of his career, acting-wise. And he's embraced that all his career, and I appreciate him for that. And I think he's great in this movie. It pretty much when he's on screen, I am with that movie. And then, of course, the special effects are cool. The action scenes are really awesome. It's not at the level of Terminator 2 in terms of big scale action, but it definitely will work for a popcorn summer movie. Don't go expecting a whole lot. Don't go expecting anything really groundbreaking, because Terminator 2 was groundbreaking. The first Terminator was really just an independent sci-fi movie. It was low budget. The second Terminator was huge budget, but it was groundbreaking, and the special effects for the liquid metal Terminator were something you'd never seen before. I remember seeing it a couple times in the theaters just because it looked so cool. There's nothing groundbreaking in this movie, but that's okay. It doesn't have to be. Kind of like Jurassic World. The original Jurassic Park was groundbreaking. No one had ever seen that before. Jurassic World, there's nothing really groundbreaking about it, but it sure as heck is a fun movie to watch. And that's how I feel about Terminator Genesis. It's a huge step up from the last movie, and it's worthy. I think it's good as a reboot of the series. I could sit down and watch another couple Terminator movies. And hopefully in those, they don't have to spend so much time kind of getting everybody up to speed, because there's an assumption that a lot of people who are seeing this hadn't seen the first movies or hadn't seen them for a while. I don't know. There's like about 40 minutes of narration at the beginning. But I understand that was needed. Even though I had just seen the movie, everybody else had. So Terminator Genesis is a lot of fun. And Arnold is what makes it work. So I'm going to have to say Terminator Genesis kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Overnight. This is a smaller film that has, I think it opened initially last week, but it's rolling out into wider release this week. A couple recently moved to LA meets up with another set of parents and hang out one night after putting their kids to bed. Their adult choices in entertainment become increasingly daring.
Hello. You new around here?
We just moved here from Seattle.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Tonight is our regular pizza night. We could turn it into a welcome to the neighborhood get-together. Huh. It could be fun.
There are things that I do in my bedroom that no one needs to know about.
I think we've reached that point in the evening where we should leave before anything crazy happens.
You want to go home, honey?
No, I want to stay here forever.
This has its roots in mumblecore, but it doesn't feel exactly like a mumblecore movie, and that actually makes it work. I'm not a big fan of mumblecore because too often you get actors who really can't improv too well. They talk too much. That's the key in improv acting, is you shut up. You do not have to fill every second with dialogue, because that doesn't feel natural. It feels forced, and it actually takes the authenticity out of it. Two of the actors in here, Jason Schwartzman and Adam Scott, are very experienced in these kind of movies. They're very good at improv. They're very good at reactionary acting, and they drive the movie. And so the ladies in it, which one of them is played by Taylor Schilling, is the other one is a French woman. I'm not going to try and pronounce her name. They take the lead from Scott and Schwartzman, and that's good. They don't try to overact them. And I think that that says something a lot about the director. I think it says a lot about the actresses in it. I think it says a lot about the actors. It's a real good cast and a good director. What this movie does is it challenges you to think what you would do in this situation. Because the whole point of this is they go essentially over for dinner and their kids go to bed. And then they're like, well, the kids are in bed. What can we do? And they're adults doing adult themed things. And of course, the main characters, which is Adam Scott and Taylor Schilling, they're kind of shocked where this starts to go, and they kind of just go along with it. And at certain points in the movie, they're like, whoa, is this getting too much? And it challenges you to think, what would you do in that situation? And you sit there and think, once you've grown up and you've had kids, you sort of lose your edge and you lose your adventurous spirit. And this is them getting it back. I'm not saying I would do everything that's in this movie. I'm not saying that my wife would do everything that's in this movie, but you'd be surprised if you got in a situation what you or your partner would be willing to go for. And that's what this movie does. And it puts you in the position, and Scott and Schilling are both very good at letting you project yourself onto them and sort of take that vicarious ride through What If Phil. And it's also very funny. This is a very entertaining movie, but also very adult. I'm going to have to say the Overnight kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I've got two more movies to talk about in the next one, Bound to Vengeance and Manglehorn, and then we're going to be talking about the box office and the world-famous DVD Roundup. Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's finish up the movie reviews. We've got two smaller films. The first one is Bound to Vengeance. A woman held captive for human trafficking escapes and forces her kidnapper to take her to the other victims.
Tell me where they are.
Why would I do that?
Because if you don't, I'll kill you.
Let's go! Just take me to the closest!
What is this place?
Somewhere you don't want to be for very long.
Who did this to you? I'm gonna end this.
You probably should have killed me when you had a chance.
In general, this kind of movie is not my cup of tea. I like a good horror movie. I like a good thriller. I am not a big fan of kidnap and torture kind of movies. And it's not a torture movie. It all happens off screen and has happened previously. And where you get that torture element is the thought of what happened before the movie started. And I generally don't like those because it's just unpleasant. I have no other reason than I don't like to see that horrible kind of thing happening to people. But it's necessary for this movie. But what this does is this movie begins where most of these kind of movies end, with her escaping, with her overpowering her captor, and then realizing that there's other women. And she takes it upon herself to shackle him and make him take her to find them. And of course, then there's other surprises for her along the way. I think there's some bold choices in here. I think this is a gutsy movie, and it certainly is playing with an established archetype. And that's good. Now, some of the bold choices that are made don't necessarily make a great movie. It reminds me a little bit of Insidious 2, which had some really neat things that James Wan tried that didn't quite work. But I give him a lot of credit for trying them. When an intimately cast, smaller movie has problems, a lot of times it's in what the characters do and the decisions they make. And if you sit there and as a viewer watching and go, well, that was dumb, that'll take you out of the movie. And there's a lot of that happening in this movie. A good chunk of them you can explain away and say, well, you know, she was held captive for so long, she's not quite right in the head right now. And there's a lot of challenges coming to her. So I get that. I can appreciate that. For me, however, there are a couple points where you're just like, why don't you just call the police? Overall, Bound to Vengeance is an interesting movie. It's a different movie. And while it doesn't quite hold together, and it struggles to make its like 80-minute running time, this is the biggest problem with a lot of movies, in the smaller, intimate movies like this. They really don't have enough in them to make it to 80 minutes. And so they kind of have to stretch. They really maybe have 50 minutes. They could be just a long, short film. But there's no market for those. So they have to stretch it to feature length. And that's where this one gets a little bit tedious. But, you know, I'm going to be nice and say it kind of rocks, simply for ambition and execution at times.
It kind of rocks.
The next film I want to talk about is Manglehorn. And the reason I'm talking about this one is because it has some big players involved in it. And it's directed by David Gordon Green. He's an independent director, and his biggest hit, I think, was Pineapple Express. He also did the movie The Sitter a couple years ago, so he's done movies that have gotten regular releases, but he's at his heart, he's an independent guy. And it also stars Al Pacino in one of many Al Pacino movies that have come out in the last couple years, where he's kind of trying to get his street cred back as an actual actor than just as a caricature of himself. It also has Holly Hunter, and she's really sweet in this movie. Al Pacino plays an acerbic locksmith trying to reconcile with his son and get over an old lover who has left him years ago.
I'm a wounded man, Clara. I got real pain in my heart.
Maybe this other woman, she'll return. Then maybe you'll remember how to love someone.
I'm a tough man to be around. I'm an angry man, but I'm not quite so angry around you.
The catch to Manglehorn is watching this damaged individual that Al Pacino plays try to navigate his life. David Gordon Green really revels in that. And that gives Pacino a lot of stuff to work with. And what's the, I think the strongest thing about Pacino in this movie is he's not just going around going, hooah, well, here we go. You know, he's not doing that Pacino that everyone's like, he's doing Pacino. He's not doing that. Al Pacino is actually acting in this movie, and good for him, because I think he's a great actor. And he, like I said, he fell into caricature in the 90s and hasn't come out of it until recently. And in fact, at times he channels Robert De Niro, not as an actor, but like the character from Taxi Driver and The Fan in particular. Al Pacino does a great job acting. It's just he's not a nice person in this film. And everyone knows somebody like this. Somebody who is alone and has no friends. And you spend 10 minutes with this person and you realize why they have no friends. Because they're unpleasant. And nobody likes to hang around with unpleasant people. And when you're young and good looking, you can get away with that. Or if you're rich, you can get away with that. But if you're old and poor and past your prime and you're unpleasant, you're going to be spending a lot of time alone. But the point is, I just don't like to spend time with people I don't like. As I talked about in Magic Mike, as I talked about in Results. And that's the biggest problem I had with this movie. I mean, it has moments in there where you're just, why are you have to sit there and think, get over what your problem is. And that's really what it is. It's this journey about this guy getting over this woman that he once loved. And it's realistic in that sense because, gosh, people act like idiots all the time. I just don't particularly want to watch a movie about it. So it's a well-made movie, has some fantastic performances. I didn't particularly like it. So I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office winners last week. I had said Jurassic World was going to win last week, and I was correct. I also said that it was going to make about $60 million, and I was close. It made $54.5 million. Inside Out just barely lost to Jurassic World. Inside Out is going to be one of those movies. It's going to be one of the highest grossing movies that has never hit number one. I mean, that's a win in Pixar's book. I mean, the movie's made $200 million by now. So that is nothing to be ashamed of, Pixar. Just because you're opening against the biggest movie of the year, that's what's going to happen. Now, the new releases last week, Ted 2 did not do as well as people were hoping. People are expecting it to play like Ted 1. And it actually played like what people thought Ted 1 was going to, but then that became kind of a breakout hit. $33.5 million, that's not bad. But the movie was a little more expensive, and they were expecting a boost in the sequel, but it really turned into the retread sequel, and I think that's because the movie suffered. It wasn't as good of a movie, and the fan base that was following it. When you talk about Pitch Perfect, the second movie was inferior to the first, but it did better because it built up such a fan base on video, and then everyone wanted to go see the movie when the new one came out. Ted did well. The mainstream liked it because it was a little different, and then it built up a huge fan base on video, but they were all a bunch of potheads who don't want to leave their house. So they didn't go see the movie. It'll do really well on home video. Trust me, on home video, it's going to be one of the biggest sellers on home video of its kind. Max did a little better than expected at $12 million. And that's it. Now this weekend, nobody knows what it's going to be. It could be Terminator Genesis going into the weekend because both Magic Mike XXL and Terminator Genesis are neck and neck. Magic Mike was inching out Terminator, no pun intended, was inching out Terminator Genesis a little bit in its Tuesday night previews and on Wednesday and going into Thursday. But it's yet to be seen what happens throughout the whole weekend. I think that Terminator is going to have a little better staying power for a couple reasons. First of all, Magic Mike should play like a typical sequel. It's going to be front-loaded, and it's a female-driven sequel, and those tend to be extremely front-loaded. You look at the Twilight movies. It's only been 3 years since the last Magic Mike, and the women that were going to go see this movie, they don't care about having to be at work. They can go see a 10 o'clock show on a weekday. And plus, 4th of July weekend is more of a family time for movies. So while it's still going to do well, it's not going to retain as much of its audience. Terminator is going to, I think, play more like a summer movie. Even though it's also a sequel, the last sequel was, 7 years ago, and it was terrible. Nobody cared about it. This is really feels more like a sequel to the movies from 84 and 91. And the way Jurassic World is not playing like a sequel, but rather as a new movie, I think Terminator Genesis is going to have legs like a newer movie. So I'm actually going to say that Terminator Genesis is going to make $35 million for the weekend, not including opening on Wednesday. So just for the 4th of July weekend, which is okay. It's a long stretch from what you would expect from its series in its heyday. But, I mean, you are looking at a movie that's almost 25 years after the last huge installment. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD roundup. I'm just going to breeze through these because it's not a terribly exciting time for DVDs right now. Get Hard, which I enjoyed, starring Kevin Hart and Will Ferrell. The Gunman, which I actually like better than most people did. Sean Penn playing a mercenary coming back into the field to save his girlfriend. And While We're Young, which makes an interesting companion piece to The Overnight. This one's not as raw, starring Naomi Watts and Ben Stiller as a couple in their 40s trying to recapture the excitement of being in their 20s. There really isn't a stinker because it's a really slow week for movies, so I think I'm just going to wrap it up right now. Next week, we're going to be talking about Minions, Selfless, and The Gallows. Until then, happy 4th of July weekend and have a fat time at the movies.